Hear more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.
Welcome to Noir Here, this podcast with me, Johan Gabrielsson. In each program, we showcase some of the best Nordic Noir writers and we meet the people behind the popular TV shows that have spread this popular crime fiction genre around the world. Today we travel to Denmark, home to The Killing and The Bridge, two of the most successful Nordic Noir television programs on the planet. We meet writer Jeppe Järvik Gram, who take us into the heart of successful Nordic Noir script writing. We meet Anna-Marit Wade, Associate Professor in Media Studies from Aarhus University, to examine the origins of the Nordic Noir style. But first, Sarah Bladel, the queen of Danish crime fiction, winner of numerous awards and four times voted Denmark's best crime writer. Here is an excerpt from her book, The Forgotten Girls.
Gone is coming, the words pounded in her ears as the rocks and branches of the forest floor tore her feet and shins. Her head was whirling, and fear made her heart constrict. She was headed for the only light she could see, like an opening in the dark. The gleam of white pulled her deeper into the woods. Confused and scared, she stumbled through the trees, gasping for air. Her fear of the dark was like a chokehold around her neck. It had been that way ever since she was ordered as a young child to turn off the light and go to sleep. Or gone would come and take her. Gone. The words sounded rhythmically and she was too slow to prevent a branch from flicking across her cheek. Holding her breath, she stopped and stood as if frozen, completely surrounded by the saturated darkness from the trees that towered around her. Her legs were shaking from exhaustion. Frightened by the sound of her own crying, she slowly stepped forward, her eyes fixed on the light ahead. It blinded her when she looked straight at it.
For Sarah Bladel, a fascination with crime stories began at a very early age.
My whole love for crime novels started when I was a child because my mom, she was reading, you know, at my bedside, she was reading mysteries. She was a huge crime fan. So she was reading Agatha Christie, for example, mysteries, and not that very hard-boiled crime novels, but she loved it and I loved listening to her. My mom was an actress and she was very good at, you know, reading out loud. So it was just so nice when she was sitting there and reading a cozy Agatha Christie mystery. I was maybe around 5 years old or something like
but
that.
But didn't you get scared?
No, I don't know. Maybe it was her voice that makes me very calm. And I was curious. And it was one of the things that we had together. Ooh, who is it? Who is the murder? How do we solve it? So I can blame her all the way.
But did you know from such a young age that you wanted to be a writer?
No, I didn't, and I never ever had the thought that I want to be a writer. I love being a reader. For me, the whole thing was to read the story, to get into the story and be soaked up in the story. Mm. So I've never ever seen myself as a writer because I really enjoy so much when everybody else, all the really good writers, put stories together and I'm just the reader. So I never ever seen that coming. It was a big surprise to myself when I realized that I have a story in my head.
How did that come to you though? How did you and when did you realize this is a story, I want to write this story?
I have been working as a journalist for many, many years. And I was working on a television show at that time, so busy, you know, all about the deadlines and coming up and people were yelling and shouting and stressing. And I won a lottery where I won a trip to Norway to skiing, and I've never ever been on ski before. So I went up to Norway. It's a little bit outside the season, so there wasn't very many people there. But up there, so cold and so beautiful and so quiet. And you, just after I have been in a very stressful situation with deadlines and TV shows, I start thinking about what if that happened? What if that could happen? What if you find a person, a journalist, actually murdered behind one of the big hotels in Copenhagen? And I was so curious about what could have happened, but it was just my way, you know, out of stress. It was just my way to tell myself a story. I didn't see it like I am building up a plot here or I'm finding characters here. I was just starting a story for myself in my head. And when I got back to work, you know, and still super, super stressful, I continued when everybody else was yelling and shouting. And this is an advice. Don't close your eyes when you tell yourself a story, because then everybody else can see that you're not listening anymore. But for a really long time, I did not know it was my first crime novel. I was just having fun in my head.
Do you think your experience, your background as a journalist affects the language that you use in your books?
My writing, I guess, is much more into the way we talk, the way we put it together. Maybe not very fancy, maybe not very, you know, complicated. And that's the thing that goes to my background, because I have dyslexia when I was a child. I still have, but not as bad as I had it when I was a child. So for me, I see things in pictures. You know, I see it like it's a movie scene or a film scene going on in my head. And that is what I'm trying to describe. And I actually think that that is why so many of my readers feel that they can follow me around in my stories, because I'm much more a picture kind of author.
I read somewhere in your writing process you have something you call a killing wall. What is the killing wall?
Yeah, that doesn't sound very charming, right?
Not really.
I have my killing wall. But yeah, and I really have it, because it's so interesting. Again, that is because of the pictures and the ideas. When I see people and they don't know that they can end up as a victim or a killer in my book, but sometimes it's just really the right face, the right person, or the right profile. And then if I find it on the internet, then I print it and put it up, and also research things, places I've been, places I'm, you know, that is important for me when I'm doing my research. It all comes up on the killer wall. But very interesting is when I'm dealing with a character in my book, and I think that the character is working, but still not totally 100% good, Then I go search for pictures, or I go out and see people, and I actually have been taking pictures with my phone just for myself. And then when I see it and I know, yes, there she is or there he is, then it makes it so much more, it comes so much more to life in my head.
How important is it for your books that they reflect what's going on in Danish society?
I do not think about, I wanted to dig into the Danish society and say my opinion about this or that. But it very often comes up that something that happens get me curious. For example, the story of the Forgotten Girls was an article I read in one of the big newspapers, and it was such an interesting article about what happened for the mental institutions way back, because we had a shift in Denmark where they moved from one way to treat mental illness into another way. When I started reading about it, I thought it might be back in the 50s or something like that, but it was not. It was actually in the 80s, where I was a young woman, where I grew up. There was a mental hospital very close to in the forest. And it makes me thinking of what happened when I had horses when I was a child. I was riding in the forest. And I met a lot of these people and say, hi, I know they were different. I know that they were placed at that hospital and they were under care, special care. But so many things makes me curious when I confront it in a private way. You know, it's not like I'm finding a topic in the newspaper or huge debate and then I feel I need to raise my voice and come up with my opinion about it. It's much more things that makes me curious.
We heard Sara Pleidel Jeppe Järvi Gram got his big break as a writer when he received a BAFTA, the UK's highest film award, for the popular TV show Borgen, a show about the Machiavellian world of Danish politics. After the success of Borgen, Jeppe Gram was offered the role of head writer for the TV show Follow the Money, which premiered in 2016. It follows a fraud investigation of a renewable energy company. How does Denmark, a small country with a population of 5.7 million, manage to create crime TV drama that has conquered the world? What's the secret? According to Jeppe Gram, it has a lot to do with DR, the Danish public broadcaster.
It has been developed through the last 20 years, I would guess, in Danish radio. We are a public broadcaster with a lot of public broadcasting responsibilities. But sometime in the late 90s, they decided that what they were doing were basically like film theater. It was very old school, not very modern. And at the same time, the dogma movement happened in the feature film in Denmark. So the former head of drama realized that something had to be done and that there was so much creative potential out there in the film industry that DR could use. And the other leg of that equation was that they sent some key people to Hollywood to see how they did series. They had some people in the NYPD Blue, and they came back and basically made a Danish model. But in essence, a lot of the things that they brought with them was very, they came from over there, from the States, and it formulated some dogmas back then, the head of drama. And one of them was the dogma of one vision. When you do a long-running TV series with a long story arcs and long storylines, you have to have one voice through it all. It has to be felt like it's one unified story. And the only way to do that is by giving the responsibility to one creative person, or maybe a very well-working creative collective. But you need one vision, and that vision they gave to the writer, and that was quite new back then.
But how does that then writer work in the later phase with a director who has another vision, or has a vision as well?
In the beginning, I think a lot of the directors were basically hired guns. They probably had to realize their own visions. Through the years, things have changed because now it's the system. Everybody understands the system and how it works and understands the reason for the fact that it's the writer's room that basically controls the storytelling and the creative process. But nowadays, I mean, for a show like Borgen or for a show like Follow the Money, we wanted the absolute best directors we could get in Denmark. So we wanted the A-list. And when you phone up the A-list and want them to work on your show, of course you have to share some creative responsibility with them. It's obvious for me. I'm a later generation of TV writers. For me, it's obvious that I will get their better work if they feel that they share the vision. I have some episode writers or some co-writers that I work very closely with. So inside the writer's room, they are my close associates. But outside of the writer's room, Mike, closest associate is by far, he's my producer. He's basically the CEO of the TV series, and I'm the head of creative. And we work together. My responsibility is everything creative, and his responsibility is everything around that. But there will not be any creative decision made that I don't sign off on.
It must be a dream for a writer.
It is. Yeah, it truly is.
And huge responsibility.
With the freedom, yeah. There's a great responsibility. Mm. So, I mean, there's nobody to blame if it goes down. I mean, if you're in Hollywood and doing a TV show and it's bad in the end, then most of the time you can blame a lot of executives for taking all the bad decisions. And you can't do that here.
Jeppe, can you tell me, in this genre of crime fiction or crime drama television from Denmark, where does Follow the Money come? Is it like continuation of the genre of crime thrillers, do you think?
In a sense, it came out of Borgen. Even though the shows are so different, I mean, with Borgen, we managed to make boring, complicated politics drama into something that you could send prime time and that people would enjoy, a large audience would enjoy. From that experience, taking something very complex and saying this might be complex, but it's also so very important, such an important part of society that we need to be able to find the drama in that. And there will be drama. And when the financial crisis happened, I was writing on Borgen, I realized how big a subject that was and how important the connections, the financial connections in the world between, for instance, I mean, a bank tumbles over in Manhattan and the repercussions are felt in rural Denmark. And those connections really shocked me. And I realized how important that subject was, and that although it's so very very complex, it had to be told. Those stories had to be told. I was still doing Borgen, so I expected a lot of other writers to dig into finance as a subject matter for TV series. And I heard a lot of shows being pitched, but none were made. So when I finished Borgen, I basically just thought, well, this is it now. Now I have to give it a go. I have to try.
Tell me about the beginning, though, of Follow the Money. How did you even think about the concept? Why was it important to tell that story, Jeppe?
I really wanted a story about how money connects us all. After the financial crisis, so many people said that everything that happened was just because of some evil bankers or something. And I thought it was too simplistic. I mean, of course, there's a lot of bankers that should have been jailed for what they were doing, for being so egotistical and cynical and even breaking the law. But for me, it was much more about all of us. It was about the greed in all of us. And that the fact that, for instance, in Denmark, I mean, the value of houses was rising so fast up until that crisis, and nobody asked a question about it. Everybody just assumed that because they owned a house, they were entitled to suddenly becoming millionaires in Danish kroner, and they didn't even have to work for it. People earned more money having a house than they did in a full year of work. Obviously, that doesn't make any sense, but people didn't ask any questions about it. Not until the world tumbled over that people started saying something, we should have done something, that couldn't have been right. Then it was too late. And I was so fascinated by this. So I knew I wanted to do a drama that dealt with greed and dealt with money, and was basically, it didn't have to be a crime story, but I've just realized that it was a way to get into that world.
We heard Jeppe Gram. Anne-Marit Wade is Associate Professor at the Department of Information and Media Studies at the University of Aarhus in Denmark. Her speciality is, you guessed it, Nordic Noir. In books and articles, Anne has examined the definition and the aesthetics of Nordic Noir. And it all began at a book club at the University of London.
My idea is that we have a long tradition in the Nordic countries, in particular within philosophy and art history, in which melancholy has been another, you can say, trademark, a word that has been linked to several artists. So like Sibelius, Edvard Munch, Ingmar Bergman, and later Lars von Trier. So it's music, it's theater, it's film, and also philosophy. And melancholy has been a very strong, I would say, both inspiration and also stylistic element in the work of some of these artists. And again, it's not a very, very clear definition. It's not like there are some specific stylistic elements that make it the Nordic melancholy. But it's been a tradition, and what interests me is that these Nordic melancholy has been related to characters and to places and landscapes and nature and climate. And I can see some of these ideas are also playing a role in the more recent Nordic noir crimes here. So that's my idea. The killing is a wonderful example, how the climate is very significant part of the visual aesthetics and these gloomy settings that they're talking about, but also the characters, how the character Sofie Gråbøl in her role as Sarah Lund she has this inner kind of conflicts and melancholy in the way she's acting. And that has been part of the character. So it's both the character and the setting and the light. The light is extreme in the Killing, we know, and it has inspired later series more in general. And it's very significant part of the Nordic noir concept in itself.
Is there something typical, but in the production of these shows that stands apart?
I think they've been very, very good developing strong ideas. And, you know, part of this is also the double storytelling or the tradition that we have in the Nordic countries when it comes to public service drama, because all of these, many of these series are public service drama. So they have this strong mandate of telling important stories to the audience. So the double plot is that it shouldn't be only a regular story. It should also be about something that is important in the society, perhaps critical, perhaps trying to illuminate something that has been hidden or difficult or whatever. For instance, about refugees, about social conflict. So this is a very strong mandate and tradition in the Scandinavian broadcaster TV drama series.
Would you say there is a difference between, when it comes to crime drama, how the difference is in the different Scandinavian countries? Danish people or Danish production is in a certain way, Swedish mm-hmm. in a certain way, or is it all kind of mixed together? What's your opinion?
A difficult question, because things are also changing. What we used to see is that in the Swedish context, they used to adapt popular crime fiction. So the Millennium, the Gotland series, the Fjällbacka, Wallander, all these series, they are based on crime series, crime fiction, and crime fiction that has been sold internationally. So that was the business model. They knew that the crime series has a market potential, and then they adopted this series for TV. In Denmark, that has been different because we had DR, who was a strong player and really wanted to develop content themselves. So they developed new drama series. So like The Killing, Borgen, all these are new series. But more recently, the last 5-8 years, we can see this is changing, partly because in Denmark, DR is also no commissioning drama series produced by other companies. In Sweden and Norway, they are both working on adaptation, but they're also working, developing their own drama series. So I won't say that the difference between the countries is that clear any longer. And Norway, they've been, until very recently, a little bit behind because they haven't had the money and the competence to invest in the series. But lately, they had produced some very, very good series that is also, that are traveling internationally. So it seems like the more mixed conditions right now.
Ann-Marit, you've been following this, you've been studying this for many years. Do you think we are in the beginning, or have we seen, do you get a sense that we're actually seeing the height of this?
My colleague is talking about the golden age of the Danish TV drama is over. And that could be the case. I can see that it's a lot of, this has inspired the industry or a lot of initiatives that I wouldn't think will end tomorrow, not at all. For instance, now they are starting up new master programs for scriptwriters in Finland, in Norway. There are new collaboration across the countries. So new Danish companies are now working with the French and the German companies and do co-productions. So I think there's so many output of this trend that we have just seen the beginning of. It's also for the artists, the Danish and the Scandinavian actors. They are now taking roles in Game of Thrones, and it's the same for the directors, for the script writers. So I think it's the knowledge and the ideas are traveling, and we can see that in Wales, in Scotland, the hinterland, that's one example. They're picking up on the ideas, and they're now trying to develop their own Nordic noir crime series. When I went to MIPCOM last year, that's a big market where they buy and sell content for TV. when they pitched the new trends in TV drama, they used this Nordic noir as a way of framing all the new trends. They talked about Spanish noir and Brazilian noir and Turkish noir. So I think it has been such a strong idea within the industry and the culture that, and it has inspired new initiatives and new collaborations. And I think that's just the beginning. But perhaps the British critics won't talk that much about the Danish TV drama any longer. That could be the case. But that's okay.
We heard Professor Anne-Marit Veid. In the next episode of Nordic Noir, we visit Norway. The richest country in Scandinavia has also some of the best crime writers. Gunnar Staalesen has been described as the Norwegian answer to Raymond Chandler. And we meet Gjermund Eriksen, the man behind one of the most talked about crime shows in Norway, Mannen. We also meet the crime writer behind the synonym Samuel Björk, and we find out why Norway produced such dark, terrifying Nordic noir stories. Thanks for listening to our Nordic Noir series. The reading from Sara Bladel's book The Forgotten Girls was done by Lily Spicer. Production is by me, Johan Gabrielsson. And technical production by Vlad Ladgman. If you like what you heard, tell your friends, subscribe via your favorite podcast app, and review us on iTunes. It helps others find us. Goodbye. sbs.com.au